I used to love the phrase, "Ain't nobody got time for that." And my guest today didn't think she had time for cancer, but life turned around and gave her the ultimate test. You are not going to want to miss this story. Hey there, and welcome. I'm your host, Regina Topolson, registered dietitian, plant-based foodie, amateur athlete, mom of teenage boys and one lucky girl, cancer survivor, and host of the Life Well Lived podcast. Living through cancer seemed like the hard part until I had to learn how to live after. We all want to feel healthy and safe and know that our life has meaning and purpose. If you're a patient, survivor, or caretaker, this is the place to find hope and inspiration through life's great disruptor and learn to live more fully today. Hello, my friend. Today on the Life Well Lived podcast, I have a special guest who has an incredible story. Not that they aren't all incredible stories, but this one has some twists and turns in it that are unexpected. And we're going to go on this journey together today. So in the studio, I have Nadine Shapira, and she has quite an interesting cancer story. So, hey, Nadine, how are you today?
I am well. Thank you for having me.
So, tell me about your induction into the Cancer Club.
Oh, well, I can't say it's great to be one of the members, but here, whether you like it or not, I have quite the layered story, I guess, and I came by it in many ways, from many directions. From several years ago, both of my sisters, one at 40, one at 43, 4, something like that, were both diagnosed early on with different types of breast cancer.
At the same time?
Nope, different times. One at 40, one at 43. I'm the youngest of the three. When that second sister gave me the phone call that she was diagnosed with breast cancer, there was less than 5 seconds for me to decide, without a doubt, sign me up for a double mastectomy, prophylactic, no questions asked. I had in my head, I have no time for cancer. That was my decision. At that time.
So funny that you say that, because so many of us feel like there's no time for this, right? I mean, who sits around and says, "Oh yeah, I have all the time in the world for this thing to come along." And lots of people that I've interviewed have said, "Ain't nobody got time for that."
Right. Two sisters in their early 40s, didn't know why at the time. We did go through genetic testing, and I did not have the BRCA gene, but two sisters in their early 40s may not have been the BRCA gene, but there's probably some gene there. There was significant history, some family history. And when you play the numbers game, doctors said you have enough significant history that warrants prophylactic double mastectomy. And I said, no questions asked, sign me up.
You were a busy lady at the time. You had a family business that you were marketing at the time.
Correct.
And two kids.
Two young boys, 14 and 15.
Okay. And so you really didn't have time between, you know, family business and taking care of two teenage boys to stop for a minute.
Right. In my view at the time, I had two busy kids and a busy life. And all I was thinking was, when can I schedule my surgery, as well as how am I going to be there for my sister to help her through her journey of treatment, which was coming? And then...
Well, I should also mention you did have a husband at that time, too.
I did.
So it was a full, complete, like, you know, family unit, everybody intact, everybody together.
Typical busy life.
Typical, yes.
Typical busy life.
Okay. So you have your mastectomies.
I have my mastectomy. I have a double mastectomy headed for reconstruction, set up for April 23rd, as scheduled.
Okay.
As scheduled, at the same time dealing with typical sports injuries that were plaguing my 14-year-old son, for about a year at the time, as well as the beginning of my sister's breast cancer surgery and treatment.
So you
in Toronto.
In Toronto. So this is what's on your plate. You've got your full family that you're taking care of. You've got this business on your hands. You've got your youngest child with some sports injuries that keep kind of, you know, coming and going and coming and going. And now your sister diagnosed with breast cancer. And you've had your own surgery. Is that right?
Correct.
And so... what are your thoughts at that time?
Like any busy working mom, you just do it.
You just get through it.
You do it. You get through it.
So tell us what happens next.
What happens next? I am getting through my days. I have my surgery April 23rd, I believe it was. And... at that time, like I said, my son was going through some sports injuries, some recovery from some incidents through the year, and we had had an appointment at Children's Hospital as a follow-up for some things that were going on with him, some unresolved issues that weren't healing with him, and he was scheduled for a full-body MRI. I was just a few weeks out of my surgery, and he was not doing well. We go in, he was loopy from all the medications because he does not do well with medical procedures. Medicated, goes into an MRI, and about a week later, on June 6th, which was about 6 weeks after my double mastectomy procedure, I get a phone call from a very, very good friend of mine who is our pediatrician, and she said, pack a bag. And I said, why? And she said, Daniel has leukemia. And I said, excuse me? And I just kind of went back to the whole, I don't have time for cancer. And there I am 6 weeks later, my son has cancer. And to say shock was an understatement. I really, at the time I look back, I did not even know leukemia was cancer. That's how naive I was. And I asked, I said, what do you mean, pack a bag? And she says, you need to get to the hospital immediately. And she says, you're going to be there a while. And I had no concept of what that even meant. And she said, a long while. And at the time, I really didn't know what a long while meant. And what a long while turned into being was 9 months in isolation.
Wow. So you refer to this time in your life as the tale of two cancers, but you were also trying to heal your own body.
I was. In fact, Daniel, literally, you know, out of the blue, he's like, what do you mean we're going to the hospital? He walked in there pretty much feeling okay. Like, I feel relatively fine thinking it was a sports injury and it turns out to be cancer. However, once he hit those double doors of isolation on the seventh floor, everything changed. He rapidly went downhill. His pain escalated to the point where he had to be sedated and was pretty much bedridden and sedated for a month. And he spent most of his time in the bed. I spent most of the time sleeping upright in the chair. And the doctors and nurses, pretty much the nurses, took care of me during my healing. He was in the bed doing pretty much nothing for the most part, being treated, but they were taking care of me, physically taking care of me while I recovered.
And what were your thoughts at the time? Because here you're torn between your sister and your child.
It was hard. It was very hard. Emotionally, it was hard because there was really no choice. My sister knew it. I knew it. My son knew it. There was no place else I was going to be except for with my son. My sister knew that, but we were linked through our phones. We texted. They went through chemo treatments together. They were bald together. They lost their hair together. There was humor in that. There was solace in it. There was, they somewhat communicated with each other through it. There was their connection. There was my connection. There was a lot to that. There was comfort in it. There was a lot of pain for me that I couldn't be there for her. But we were there for each other, and our relationship, hers and my relationship, grew tremendously because of it.
What was your mindset at the time?
Chaos, survival. It was...
You told me you had a favorite word.
I had a favorite word somewhere early on. I don't even know where in time, because there was such a blur of time in all of it. Someone brought me a necklace that my hand just rested on for so much of the years that passed that said, believe. And anybody going through this journey, whatever they believe in, whether it's their faith in God or not, or whatever it is, I believed. I believed from that very beginning on June 6th that he would be okay, that I would be okay. I don't know what I was believing in, but I just believed that we would be where we are today.
And what did Daniel want to do with his life before all this happened?
Gosh. That's a good question. You'd probably have to ask him.
Because he was very driven to do some really cool things while he was going through his treatment.
If you ask Daniel, which maybe you will someday, Daniel, you read it in his college entrance exam or his college entrance essay. You talk to him because he's done a lot of public speaking. Daniel never asked himself why, which many of us do that go through any of this. He never went to that place. I think that's the difference between children and adults that go through it. That's probably the beauty of children. He never questioned. He always looked at the big picture and what he was going to do. And he will, it kills me every time, but he said it was the best year of his life.
Wow.
He describes it as the best year of his life.
So just knowing Daniel a little bit, I feel like he's living his dream right now. Would you say that that's true?
Daniel is exactly where he is supposed to be. And it's because of his diagnosis. It's because of everything that happened to him where he is. So Daniel always was a sports enthusiast in the aspect of talking about sports or being involved in it from the announcing or the analyst side of it. And lo and behold, somehow because of this shit show that was put on our plate, if I can say that. Can I say that?
You can say that. You did.
I just did. We lived it. It's ours, right? Embrace it. That was put in our lap. It, one day, Ryan Seacrest, have you heard of him? Walked through our door and into our lives, and it opened up the doors for Daniel and has put him where he is today. The Ryan Seacrest Foundation opened a studio at the hospital, one of their 10 studios that they provide for patients at children's hospitals that allow them somewhat of an escape to get away from what they're going through at the hospitals. And there was this cocky little child that entered a contest one day and used a talent that who knew that he had while he was whiling away the hours of agonizing boredom. And let me step back from that conversation, that Daniel uses humor, which we used to get through our long, long days, and said cancer was the least of his worries in the hospital. Living with my mother in that room for 9 months damn near killed me. So,
spoken like a true teenage boy.
Right. I say it wasn't a walk in the park for either of us. It went both ways. But so Daniel walks into the studio with a contest entry and said, here's your winner. And the heads of the studio said, yeah, whatever. And they look at this contest entry and said, oh my goodness, look at this. And they ran with it. And
what was the contest?
It was a write a parody to a Frozen song. Frozen was very big at the time. You know, how many times can you listen to Let It Go? Well, let me tell you, this kid wrote a song that went beyond viral during the Broncos 50th Super Bowl season, whatever. And the old cliche of making lemonade out of lemons, this kid added some vodka to it, and off we went.
Love that about Daniel.
One thing led to another, and here's the kid eventually broadcasting live at the Super Bowl. Here's a kid that's Make-A-Wish was announce the Broncos' first-round draft pick in front of millions upon millions upon millions. The kid didn't bat an eyelash. Doesn't break a sweat. That's his comfort zone. He had a summer internship in L.A. at NFL Network, which led to his dream when an NFL producer writes your recommendation along with the Seacrest Foundation for getting into college. And he's at the best school in the country for broadcasting, and he's living his dream.
Congratulations to Daniel.
Oh, and by the way, he's a 5-year cancer survivor.
Even more congratulations to Daniel. So where did you find humor in all of this?
Oh, did you not hear a little bit about Daniel there? That is, you know, there were unsurmountable moments, you know, not even day to day, but hour to hour. You know, the kid had less than a 5% chance of survival. How do you get through that? And we laughed. We laughed. I'd like to say we laughed every day. We did not laugh every day, but boy, did we try to find humor in everything. Mm. we had to get through the moments. We had to get through the days. We had to look at it with a positive attitude. And that kid got me through it. I think it was not vice versa. I think it was him getting me through it.
You did some blood drives and some really incredible things in the community to help out during this time.
After, yes. After we got through it. Now, a blood drive to find, not blood drives, bone marrow drives to find, Daniel needed a bone marrow transplant for survival. He did not go into remission during his first round of induction, which meant he needed a bone marrow transplant to survive. And he did not have in his family, only 30% of people have a match in their family. Daniel did not. His brother was not a match. Parents only are as good a match as anyone random. So his father and I were not a match. So we needed to go into the National Bone Marrow Registry to find a match for him. And thank goodness somebody was a match. He had an anonymous donor. And early on, when Daniel was diagnosed, a very close cousin of ours held a drive in the community. And from that, I realized community comes out. They come out in droves to help. They want to help where they can. And I saw that early on. We couldn't be there because we were in the thick of it. But it meant the world to me. And when Daniel was well enough, both he and I took that upon us as a mission. And since then, we have signed up thousands of people into the registry having random bone marrow drives. And now Daniel in college is going to be holding drives in college. I'm very proud of him. I don't know where it'll lead, if this will become a platform for him someday, but it's something I hold dear to my heart of a way to give back.
So tell me about the Courage Classic. Daniel participated in the Courage Classic with his friends, and now you're taking it on as your own.
I try. So Daniel's first year out of transplant, his physician's assistant, who is a dear friend of ours, who was also a transplant recipient, is a member of the Courage Classic Team Wheels of Justice, and came to Daniel and said, as a transplant recipient and cancer survivor, one of the side effects is damage and long-time side effects to the heart. And as a way of staying healthy, one of the best things you can do is cardio exercise. Riding a bike, why not? Riding a bike for 40 or 80 miles in the mountains, not so sure. But the Courage Classic is one of the biggest fundraisers for Children's Hospital, and that was a way to get involved with the hospital and give back. And along with that was raising funds that specifically go towards the Center for Cancer and Blood Disorders. And that is our family. It's our home away from home. It's where we feel was the best way to give back. And Daniel, in his ridiculousness of teenage stubbornness, said, I can do that. And lo and behold, less than a year out of transplant, decided with him and a group of his friends, almost zero training, the kids did it. They rode 40 miles at altitude, 2 days in a row for a total of 80-something miles. Daniel became one of the top fundraisers in the Courage Classic. I think in 3 years has raised well over $20,000. And each year, in all 3 years, has always been a top fundraiser. And has taken it on as, you know, his project. Except last year decided he was going to work at a summer camp. So I decided, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to do it on your behalf. And that became my new thing. And it's become a passion for me. I haven't rode a bike in 30 years, so my boys sort of looked at me and said, yeah, whatever, Mom. And that's become a goal for me, so to speak.
I love when our kids look at us and say, yeah, whatever, Mom. Those are the best moments.
And I did it.
And you did it.
I did it.
We did it.
Yes, we did it.
What role do you think that nutrition and lifestyle played in your recovery and healing, and in Daniel's recovery and healing, and in your sister's recovery and healing?
Nutrition was huge, especially for a bone marrow transplant recipient, because being a bone marrow recipient and cancer survivor, your entire immune system is gone. Mm. And he had to rebuild that. And the food restrictions are absolutely mind-boggling. It teaches you everything all over again about food and what is healthy and builds your immune system and is not good for your immune system. And I realized, you know, how unhealthy we used to eat, and we started all over again. And it was good for us. It was really good for us. We came home from the hospital and started a new way of eating, and it was just cleaner, and it was right, and out with the mass-produced foods and the packaged foods. And I can't say that we stuck to the organics because it was very expensive, and it was hard to do, but we just ate cleaner and healthier, and a lot of the... we did the bone broths, we did the fruits and vegetables, we've never eaten at a buffet ever since, because no one should.
Well, and I think that's an important point too, is that even if you can't do it 100% perfectly, doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to somehow do better.
It was kind of like the good rule of thumb, so to speak, and It was just good rules to follow that you just don't do those things, mm-hmm. you know? We went from a kid that, you know, ate junk and ate crap to knowing better on how to do it. And now he's a kid away in college, and he still eats really healthy, really healthy food. He doesn't have to make those good choices, and neither do I, but I do.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah.
So... one last question. What does living a life well lived mean to you?
A life well lived. It means living with gratitude and appreciation for just living your best life and just getting to live it.
So true. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate you being here today. I hope you've laughed. I hope you've learned. I send you healing strength, and I'm grateful for you. You've been listening to the Life Well Lived podcast. If you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and share it with your friends so they can benefit too. Check out the show notes so you can connect with me on social media. Peace and love. Until next time.